Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Savage Nation, it's late July, and for those of you who are working and listening to the Savage Nation, or let's say you're on vacation and you still have one ear tuned into the world, welcome to the program. There is a lot of news. I mean, let's start with the economic news. The Marxist president in the White House wants to tax the middle and lower classes in order to fund the government. And he tells us that it's time to eat our peas, whatever that means. I guess it means the children have to eat peas. I happen to like peas, but I guess when a kid is told, eat your peas, it means they're good for you, but you don't like them. So he's saying, eat your peas, and his wife goes out and enjoys a 1,600 to 1,700 calorie lunch. That's Michelle's hypocrisy. Big deal. You say big deal. And it is nothing. It's nothing. It's nothing. It's absolutely nothing. You know, last night I was laying in bed watching the rise and fall of the Third Reich for the millionth time, but this was a different version on History Channel, two-hour special, and you see the rise of the Nazi thugs through the zenith of their empire when they were killing and invading and butchering and slaughtering and torturing, and then the maniac wanted to then control the world, and of course we know how it turned out, which is he wrecked his own nation. The German people lost their own nation as a result of one man's madness. And I was saying to myself, you know, compared to what went on then, compared to what's going on right now in Syria, where Assad is machine gunning his own people who are trying to stand up to him, you know, what we have here is paradise. We live in paradise. So it's very hard to get worked up over things such as a flimsy socialist presidency that really is running on one wheel right now. I mean, he's been found out. Sure, his loyalists don't know who he is and don't care, or they do know who he is and they do care, but the majority of Americans are pretty much sure of the fact that he doesn't really know what he's doing, that he's over his head. I said to you on Friday that he's not over his head, that he is probably the cleverest man to have ever inhabited the White House, and that was in reference to his destruction of NASA. With the stroke of a pen, he destroyed our lead in space and turned it over to the Soviet Union, something the Soviet Union had been after for, oh, I guess 50 years now. This man, this enemy within, with the stroke of a pen, without any discussion, so far as I know, in Congress, eliminated man's the U.S.'s mission to the moon, eliminated the shuttle. We are now passengers. We will be passengers after this trip on Russia's Soyuz spacecraft, and they keep raising the cost of the trip to the space station. In fact, it could reach a point where the space monopoly now owned by Russia as a result of the enemy within could reach such a fever pitch that we may be banned from reaching the space station, the so-called International Space Station. He set us back years in space technology, which, of course, is where the action is going to be in a future war. And he got away with it without so much as a debate in the United States of America. Now, of course, he's trying to tax the middle class out of existence, and he's trying to say that they're the rich. The rich now is who he's calling. The middle class are now the rich. So, again, on a scale of human tragedy, this is nothing. It's just politics as usual. You've got a far-left president, to some, a Marxist, to those of us who really know what he is. And he's just doing what Marxist socialists have always done, which is cripple economies, tax productivity, and basically take away people's freedoms as frequently as he can while enjoying the high life himself. He and his family have Certainly enjoyed Air Force One, Air Force Two, Air Force Three, and trips around the world at government expense without so much as a noted peep in the mainstream press. The midstream media does not even note how much this is costing the people in a time like this. It's unbelievable to me. The hypocrisy is overwhelming. But again, on a scale of 1 to 100, it's nothing. Most of us go about our daily business. We don't need to be armed. We walk in relative peace. Sure, there are pockets of violence in America, but most of us are sane enough to avoid those areas. And we can more or less go about our business as we have for most of our lives. And we don't really pay much attention to it. So having said all of that, there's still a lot of news. And let's focus now on the news of the world. As you know, Rupert Murdoch, who I have affectionately called Moloch for a number of years on The Savage Nation, for a fictionalized character in a certain literature, Rupert Moloch Murdoch has finally hit a stone wall. In many ways, he overreached. He has now been accused of illegally hacking into voicemails. And you may say, well, who cares? It's in Britain. It's got nothing to do with me. But you're wrong, because the same company that owns the News of the World owns Wallbanger, owns Hannity, owns owned Beck until Beck left, owns the New York Post and numerous other media outlets in the U.S. And furthermore, and here's a shocking point, there may be a connection to me, Michael Savage, and why I was banned from the United Kingdom. But you have to know the background in order to understand this, and I'm not going to bore you with it. I know there's a heat wave in 16 states, so the least the important thing to you is that people's phones were hacked in Europe. Who cares about that? Come on, Mike. Make me laugh. Come on, Mike. Make me laugh. Come on, Mike. Make me laugh. How about the guns to drug lords scam that is now unfolding in the White House? Does that bother you that your president and your attorney general could in fact, their administration could be rocked to the core? Project Gun Runner, where the government... Well, go to my website, michaelsavage.com, and you'll see a cartel leader who was just captured in Mexico said that the U.S. government sold him some of the guns that they were using in their murderous rampage. Did you know that? No, I guess you didn't know that, because your local paper told you about Casey Anthony. And they also told you about somebody hit a ball out of a park. Casey Anthony, baseball. So this heady stuff about the shuttle's last flight leaving Russia with space monopoly, the White House involved in guns to drug lords, these are important stories, but when you have a government of sociopaths and a nation of drug addicts, they're not important stories at all. So therefore, let me entertain you. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. If you care to talk about these or any other stories, I suppose you can call me. If not, we can talk about anything else that you'd like, assuming that I'm interested in and I know something about it. So I'll begin on that note by telling you what I did yesterday, since you're not interested. But I'm sort of interested in telling you that in the midst of all of this madness, you do have to find your corners of sanity and peace. For me, it's water. I've always loved going out on the water. And I go out on my boat. So yesterday, it was windy all weekend, and I didn't think I'd get out because I don't really want to get a merit badge in stormy weather. You know what I'm saying? You got 16 states in heat, and here in California, Northern California, we're blessed. It's like 56, 57 degrees at night. You know, hits high 60s, maybe low 70s. We've just been enjoying phenomenally great weather after the heat wave of like early last week. Fog. Cool, you need a coat, the way I love it, right? So I don't go anywhere for that reason. What's the point of going anywhere? But I wanted to go out in the boat, but I don't want to go out in a 25, 30 knot wind. I'm really not in the mood for the merit badge, and you know, as I say, in stormy weather. So I'm waiting. So the weather breaks a little bit. So I call up my friend Mike, who's like he's a captain. He delivers boats, great guy. And Mike, you want to go out? All right, I just delivered a boat. I'll come down in an hour, because I didn't want to go out in even the mild wind alone. I can handle my 40-ton boat alone in decent weather, calm weather, and I do. But on a windy day, I really didn't want to come back with Teddy. I'm alone with Teddy. To try to dock with a poodle running around back and forth, he always thinks he's docking the boat with me. I mean, it's really funny to watch. The guy loves to hear the kid, the dog, a kid guy. I don't know what he is anymore. It's like I'm a human being to me at this point. I'm going batty altogether. He's so attached to me. I'm so attached to the dog. I don't know whether he's a person or an animal, or I'm an animal or a dog half the time, or a person. We're like one in the same. We're bonded. So when I pull into a dock and I have to jump off the boat, he jumps too. And he tries to grab the lines and tie them up for me with his mouth. It's very cute, but very dangerous at the same time, because you got 40 tons of fiberglass, steel, stainless steel, teak, gasoline, diesel fuel, rather, and oil and all sorts of things. You don't really want to be worried about a dog getting squashed between you and the dock. So I figured, all right, Michael, go out with me. So we go out, and it was absolutely incredible, and I was again one with nature. Just a small 10 knot, 12 knot run down the bay. I like to watch the water, or the movement of the water. I like to look at the landforms, which are amazing. You know, we have here in Northern California, we have an amazing geography in that you have pine studded mountains that drop drastically right into the bay, and then you have 70 feet of water right offshore, 15 feet offshore, 10 feet offshore. You could be in 70 feet of water. Because fundamentally, the entire Bay Area is on mountaintops, which, of course, if you're into geology, as I am, and botany, as I am, you realize that we're here as visitors on a very, we're visitors on this planet for a very, very brief interval, not only geologically a very brief interval, but, of course, in terms of our own life cycle. But you take a look at this, a bay like this, or wherever you may be, you look around, you see all this landform, you're on mountaintops. And look at what we, the ants, have accomplished in such a short period of time geologically as we have inhabited these mountaintops. I said to myself as we continued the boat through downtown Sausalito. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Eddie, my love, I love you so.
Back on the air. I know, I'm just joking. It's rock and roll every day. I mean, what am I going to tell you? It's summertime. You know what I'm saying? Don't you want to relax once in a while? So the world's going, you know, we're in a handbasket. So you have a very, very sneaky Marxist president in the White House. You have a basically do-nothing Congress. You have Russia that's finally gotten what they've wanted for 50 years. They beat us in the space race. You've got China beating us in technology and space. What could be better? What could be better watching your nation go from one of the greatest in the history of the world, in fact, the greatest in the history of the world, into obscurity because of a plot that's been run upon this nation for so many years? I mean, why worry about it? I myself am suffering with a headache like you can't believe. And I'm telling you this for a reason. I may have to split ski at the end of the hour. I mean, I never, ever do this. I don't pull a Glenn Beck with the hemorrhoids and the crying and the tears. And I'm going to go to the Tabernacle Choir and pray to God. I don't do it. But no, honest to God, I got a smasher on my back of my head, which I'm afraid of. I mean, it feels like this is like one of those things where when you move your head, everything hurts. And if I talk too loud, it hurts. I feel like I had like off in my head. So I'm going to keep it on a low pace and do the show, give you some of the news. Like, here's a nice little story for you. For some reason, it's been needling me, like, what's going on with Ground Zero Mosque? What's going on with the ground? I kept asking myself out of nowhere. It came up in my head. There's not one story on what the radical Muslims are doing with the Ground Zero Mosque. I ask the story. I ask it of my producer, Beowulf, and bingo, he sends it to me. It just came out today. I can't believe my instincts. Judge tosses out suit over mosque near Ground Zero. New York, July 11, 2011. The lawsuit launched by a former New York City firefighter against the construction of Islamic Community Center. That's bull crap. It's a victory mosque. Near Ground Zero has been tossed out by a New York judge. Now, of course, the word New York and judge together, the three words together, is oxymoronic. New York Supreme Court Justice Paul G. Fineman ruled that the firefighter had no legal standing to bring on the suit, and he said that the mosque can go ahead. Now, I got to tell you something. A lawyer for developer Sharif Al-Gamal called the decision a victory for America. This is a victory mosque for radical Islam, as far as I'm concerned. And what really bothers me here is how a Jewish judge, if I dare say it, and I guess I dare say it, since I'm kind of fascinated by history and how it keeps repeating itself, how a Jewish judge bends over backwards for radical Islamists who are trying to smash America in the face with a... See, I'm yelling again. How do you not yell when you see what's going on in this country? How do you not get upset? Judge tosses out suit over mosque near Ground Zero. Leave it to me. My instincts are the best in the business. I knew something was going on because they were laying low. They were laying low. So they were doing something behind the scenes. If it was me, I'd investigate the judge down to the cleaning store he goes to. I'd check out his daughter's dental bills if it was me. I mean, of course, not implying that Judge Feinman is not anything but as clean as the driven snow. Or that in any way am I implying that Judge Feinman was reached by the wonderful fellows behind the Ground Zero Mosque. I am not implying that in any way. I'm sure Judge Feinman is a fine, upstanding fellow, and I dare say no more for the fear of the ADL attacking me. I mean, after all, he could do no wrong when I can only do wrong. But nevertheless, I fell and bending over backwards to find in favor of Islamists, in one man's opinion. That's all it is. It's one man's opinion. That's all. So you want to talk about that? Don't call me. Call 911. 1-800-449-8255. What do you want to talk about? I have no idea. It's hot. Everyone. No one wants to talk about any. Murdoch? No one's interested in Moloch? I wonder if Wallbanger et al. Are worried about the Moloch scandal. Are they afraid that their income... No, like if you were a Leprechaun or Wallbanger, and you saw this going on with your parent company in London, and your boss tweet is over there in England, and boss tweet is in the back of a limo with a Panama hat, and boss tweet's putting on the Ritz, putting on the smile like all is well. Would you be afraid that somehow this could impact your con? I mean your income. I meant your income, not your con. Your incon. Your income. I mean, would you be afraid that the whole thing could be up soon, that wrapping yourself in the flag? I mean, because if you combine the amount of times they've wrapped themselves in the flag and said, you're a great American, with how much money they make, I mean, you could probably fly to the moon on the dollars.
Savage.
It's good to live in interesting times. I mean, I feel blessed. I know it's an overused phrase. And then you start to sound like one of the fake conservative preachers with the crying jags in it. But, I look back, it's been a blessing. Yeah, it's a hard road, but how hard really compared to what? How hard has it been really compared to what, Eastern Europe in the 40s? Or how hard compared to Stalingrad? How hard is life in America? It's been easy. It's nothing. It's a snap. So I had a few 20-year, 30-year interludes where socialists tried to derail me because I was a white male and they needed slots for idiots. That's all. I mean, but so other than that, it's been a dream. I'd almost feel like giving you some how to cook a fish recipe rather than talk about Rupert Murdoch or the gun story with Obama. You see how he aged? By the way, you take a look at Obama. Man, that guy, he aged 10 years in the last few months. I don't know what it is. Maybe all the golf or something. There could be toxins in the golf course while he's aging. Let's hope not. I mean, something in the grass. Something. I don't know what it is. Bad diet? Something. Stress? He never thought it would be this hard? I mean, till now, the skids were greased by the controllers from the KG. But, everything was skidded and greased and go for nothing. The Punaho, and don't worry, we'll bury your records at... And now, he's a guy. Look, you look at the history books, and you see when Hitler came to power, what they were saying with the dictatorship. And I have to use the example, not because Obama's like Hitler, don't get me wrong, but listen, here's what a dictator says. Ein Volk, Ein Reich, Ein Führer, meaning one person, one people, one nation, one leader, right? Ein Volk, one people, Ein Reich, I think, one nation, one government. Not government, and then ruler, one leader, one dictator. And then they were saying things like Hitler is Germany and Germany is Hitler. Hitler is Germany, Germany is Hitler. They're brainwashing the people into accepting the absolutism of Hitler. Now, you see the same thing today in Syria, where Assad, the pinhead, and I use that phrase because he looks like, that family always had a microcephalic look, incidentally. The man is machine-gunning his own citizens in Syria, and the world does nothing. Nothing. Zero. It's that Israel they talk about because a Palestinian broke a hangnail throwing hand grenades into a nursery. But here you've got Assad machine-gunning his own people, and the world does nothing. Admittedly, Turkey's massing troops on the border with Syria, and they may invade because they're not going to sit idly by because it could have blowback for them. But the point I'm making is, you go back to the bigger picture, Ein Volk, Ein Reich, Ein Führer, right? Of course presidents would like to have absolute power. Not just Obama the Marxist. Bush would have liked it. LBJ would have liked it. You name the president, they all would have liked to have absolute power. And the genius of our founders, though I have to repeat it for you again, was that we absolutely didn't want absolutism. And so the founding fathers set up a split government. Two parties came along later, but they set up a split government, balance of powers, right? Separation of powers. And that was set up so that no one man or no one group could take over the country. That's why we seem to think that Congress is crippled. That's actually a good sign. It's supposed to be crippled. In a dictatorship, the budget would have been resolved overnight. Ein Führer would have written the budget. That's all. If you didn't like it, he put you in a gas chamber. So the fact that they're fighting over taxes and they're fighting over so-called, whatever they call Social Security and Medicaid and welfare. What do they call it now? Entitlements. I love the word entitlements. I'd give them an entitlement, the bums. Half the immigrants who sneak into this country don't work. They sit at home and blow dope day and night and drink beer in their hovels, and then they hate America on the side. Don't tell me what goes on. I'm no fool. I don't read the propaganda. They sit here in these houses here all over the country, sitting around blowing dope and drinking beer and cursing America. They tell me about immigration. They're not my father, okay? They're not my grandfather. They're not your grandfather. Don't tell me they're all the same. Don't give me that rubbish. I've been around the block a few times, and I've been around the nation a few decades. You know what I'm saying? Don't give me the garbage. They're all the same. So anyway, of course he'd like to give them more welfare and more bennies. Why does he? Because more votes. That's all. That's what a dictator would like to do, but he can't do it. So that's why he's turning gray. He's finding out finally that although the skids were greased for him since childhood, now all of a sudden he has to actually deal with things. He has to negotiate. He's not used to it. He's used to dictating, getting his way, or at least doing what people wanted done and getting it done for them, whichever way you want to look. So he's turning gray because it's very hard to reach that point where you realize you're no longer in total charge, which is the way it should be in a democracy, a relative republic like ours, democracy, call it what you want. I don't even like the word democracy, but okay, that's what they call it. So now, having said all of that, I'll give you a fish recipe, if you'd like, on how to cook fish. Do you know that cooking fish properly took me my entire life to learn how to do? As simple as it is to cook fish, it's one of the hardest things on earth. And most people don't know how to cook a fish. It's the easiest thing in the world. But think of how long it took me to do it. Now, it is true many decades ago I did it. I lived in Spain for one summer. You know, I thought I was going to go to school in Europe. And I lived in a little apartment in Mallorca in the mid-60s. I used to buy fresh fish and cook it. Who knew how to cook? I threw olive oil in a pan and it smoked. And I threw the fish until it burned and I ate it. I didn't even know what it tasted like. I was drunk most of the time on wine, I think. Who knew? You know, when you're young, you don't really have a taste for food. You eat out of expediency just to make sure you don't faint in between partying. You just make sure that your caloric content is maintained when you're young in order to party on. But it's really simple. But the most important thing about the fish is the mother fish. That's the most important thing to know. The most important thing about the fish is the mother fish. Thank God for the mother fish. You know what I'm saying? So that's number one, the genes, how good it was. And number two, how old it is. That you know already. That's basic. But most of you don't have the guts to smell the fish in a store nor smell the fish in a restaurant. I'm lucky. I grew up with old world relatives who had total and absolute nerve. Butchers they would yell at, don't give me that garbage, bring it out of the freezer. Fishmonger, they make them take push it over the counter to smell it. Restaurants, in my day, you went in a fish restaurant, the waiter actually brought the fish you were going to eat out, and put it in front of you so you could smell it. Would you believe it? Today, could you imagine average whitefish person, an average pink whitefish, suburban whitefish male or woman, daring to ask a waiter to bring a fish out to smell it? They would rather die than do that. Because the whole table would be, oh my God, look how impolite she is. Look at that. She didn't vote for Obama and she asks to smell the fish. How do you like that? But truthfully, your nose, if it actually works, is your best indicator. And then, of course, you know, it has to look right if it's glazed. But then, now let's say we pass the mother of the fish is good. The fish is fresh, meaning it's at least 3 days old. Because you're not getting fresh fish. I don't care where you're buying it. I've spoken to fishermen. Until you eat it, it's 3 days. I don't care where they say it was caught. I don't care how long. Until it gets to you, between the fisherman and the dock and the wholesaler and the truck, it's 2-3 days later. You probably never ate fresh fish in life unless you actually caught the fish. So let's say it's 2 days old and that's fresh fish for us, 2-3 days old. And it still sort of smells not. It's simple. Now, do you want it browned or do you want it not browned? Because we're going to put it on a frying pan. We're going to saute it. That's all we're going to do. If you'd like it to have a little brown to it, you've got to use like that fake butter, like a Smart Balance. I don't use regular butter. I don't like the stuff. Never mind the cholesterol. I just don't. I've gotten so. And I use olive oil anyway, but I mix it now because I do like a little browning. So I use a little of the olive. I like Spanish olive oil myself. It's less acidic. And then you don't make it too hot. But don't put that fish in when the oil is just warm. See, this is the trick. You can't put the fish in when the oil's just sitting there warming up because all you're going to do is make the fish oily. But on the other hand, if you make the oil so hot that you put it in, it splashes and burns, it's all wrong. You don't want it to sizzle. You want it to be so hot that it cooks right away where you hear it go tss without burning, right? You put the fish in 3 minutes one side, 2 minutes the other. That's if it's a fillet of, let's say, a Petrolli sole, any kind of sole. That's fast. So it's thicker, so you go 4 and 3. Now, what do you put on it when you flip it over once? And then I'm going to stop at the fish recipe because it's very much like politics. So you do the one side for let's say, the 3 minutes. Now you turn it over. That's where you're going to put all your flavor on the other side. Because if you spice it on the other side, it's going to burn it. I like to use on my – I don't use lemon. I hate the taste of lemon on fish. They came up with that just to mask the smell of old fish, personally. Lemon on fish is used strictly to mask the stink. So if you got fresh fish, throw your lemons away, unless you particularly like an acidic fish, which I don't. I like to put capers, a few capers, and pimentos is my latest flavor addition on fish. Would you believe it? I like pimentos. I don't know why, but pimentos and capers are very nice on the top. And that's the end of the story. And that's the whole reason that I'm good at politics, is because if you know how to pan fry a fish, which I know how to do, then you could also pan fry the news of the day in exactly the same way, lightly and easily without burning it. Because you could easily burn the news, and you could also undercook the news. The same way I just told you how to cook fish is the same way I deliver the news to you. I don't want to overdo it. I mean, I could have made the oil so hot today and thrown the fish, and you would have turned the show up because you would have gotten scared. You understand? Now already we're going to move into the nut calls now about health and arthritis and the thing, and you got a joint pain. Dr. Savage, what do? I have a wife for 63 years, and we don't on the bed in the monkey business no more. Is there something we can do? No, don't ask me about that. I'm not answering. New York, Doug, on WOR. What's on your mind, Doug?
Michael, I just wanted to thank you for your kindness to animals. My wife and a big Wealth Matters animal lovers, and it rounds you out as a person. In addition,
That's right. There's only one religion on earth that hates dogs. That's all you got to know.
Exactly. The other thing I wanted to mention, you talked about all these foreigners. I don't know how many American people know how many immigrants are working on work visas, and large corporations are protecting the stock shares or the value of the stock by laying off their full-time employees and hiring, you know, immigrants who are on work visas for much less money. And this
Well, that's the American way. That's absolutely the American way. That way the labor statistics are good for Obama, too. So both parties win. The big business wins because they get slave labor, and Obama wins because the unemployment rates don't go up.
Yeah, but all these politicians talk about getting the American workforce back to work. Why not?
Oh, they're full of workforce back to work. Obama just outsourced NASA. What are you talking about? He outsourced the flying to the moon. So what is he? What's he talking about? He just eliminated 10,000 jobs by killing NASA's moon mission, and nobody reported it but me. 10,000 jobs wiped out by the genius in the White House, and nobody reported it but me.
We listen to you every evening because your insight is brilliant. It really.
But are you eating dinner when you're in New York? It's you're dying from the heat, right?
Yes.
What is it, like 109 out there?
No, it's 91 and it's a humidity of about 80 something. But
oh God! So where are you, indoors with air conditioning?
Oh well, I'm in my car, but and it's air conditioned. But I have to tell you, you always give us a comment.
I want to ask you something. How did people live in the 50s without air conditioning? Not in their houses and not in their car. They didn't die. They went to work. They went home. How did we live in those days?
I grew up.
I mean, we didn't drop dead because it was 95 degrees in the shade. I know. I want to ask, how did the world go on without air conditioning? We did it.
Yeah, I know.
You remember that, like you see movies in the 50s, people slept on fire escapes, for example, right? It was a lot of fun. You put a mattress on a fire escape. Kids loved it. Of course, you can't do it today because you get mugged, raped, and killed.
I used to love going to the movies all afternoon on a Saturday and just look for the...
So you're a little on the older side. You also, did you grow up pre-air conditioning?
Yes, I'm 60 years old. So.
See, I think I'm going to come up with a new definition of mankind in America, pre-AC and post-AC. I think it's one of the finest definitions of the two types of characters that have evolved in this country. Because if you grow up without air conditioning, you're absolutely hardier and you can put up with a lot of things. But if you grow up like where I need air conditioning everywhere, air conditioning, you can't tolerate any kind of discomfort. And so you say, oh, I'm depressed, I need a medication. I'm a this, I need a medication. I got a that, I need a medication. That's why you're a cripple. I'm glad my father was tough on me. I'm really glad he made me work young. I'm glad he yelled at me and told me that I'd amount to nothing unless I worked harder. I'm really glad of it. I would raise a child the same exact way. I would. It works. It's actually tried and true in every society on earth. You raise a child a nice way. You know what they wind up? Robert F. Kennedy Jr. You raise a child the nice way, which is you give them the mobile over the crib, and you never yell at them. You never fight with your wife around them within the vicinity. Everything's peace and love. They wind up a junkie at five. Some kind of childhood medication and ailment, which leads to a teenage medication and ailment or ailment and medication, which leads only to a political career and medication. That's the only thing you could wind up is some kind of sap working for the government thinking that you're a genius. There's no, you're not capable of working in the regular world. It's impossible if you grew up in that kind of world. Take a look at Robert F. Kennedy Jr., what he amounted to. Remember what a nice little kid he was? Look at him, you know. It's like grandchildren. I said this to someone yesterday. He laughed his head off. I got to put this delicately because it's a family show. No, it's not dirty or anything, but it's going to be misconstrued. I have a certain sense of humor. I'm going to give you something about grandchildren in a minute when I come back.
Clear.
No, I hope you don't mind my style of delivering news and opinion, which is I move around, cooking, nature, boating, then a little politics, Michelle Obama eating a 1,600 calorie lunch. While I'm telling you to eat carrot sticks, she eats a cheeseburger, French fries, chocolate shake, and Diet Coke at Shake Shack in DuPont Circle. And then she goes out and tells you should eat breadsticks. You should eat carrot sticks. He tells you to tighten your belt and eat your peas, and he's getting ready to take another Air Force One junket. What's new under the sun? Ein Volk, Ein Reich, Ein Führer. You know, I mean, that's the way it works. You got to study history to understand how lucky we are. And the only reason we're lucky is because the genius white men who created the nation, the genius founding fathers, thank God that they set up this system, or else we'd be living with Ein Volk, Ein Reich, Ein Führer, one way or the other. I mean, that's what we'd have here. So, you know, better count your blessings, whether you're just a minted American or not even minted and you're sitting home smoking dope with your friends and drinking beer and hating the country. Thank God, that's all. Thank God the country's not a little tighter because we'd break your door down and find out how you're scamming the country. Just thank God we're such a weak nation of idiots that you could come in here and do this to us, and you get away with it and laugh at us. Just thank God. That's all. So, as I say, there's a whole dividing line in America between those who were born and lived without air conditioning at some point. Because the whole point I'm making is this thing with I'm not comfortable. That's the chick thing, right? The chick thing is you're making me uncomfortable or I'm not comfortable. Where'd they get the idea they're supposed to be comfortable 24/7 in life? What's that, like somewhere in the U.S. Constitution or in the Bible? You are born and you shall be comfortable every moment of your life. You're not supposed to be comfortable. In fact, you have to learn how to deal with discomfort, pain, and then you can survive this world. But if you're gonna think you're supposed to be comfortable every minute, you're going to wind up a nervous wreck. Then you're going to have depression, and I need pills, and I need this, I need ecstasy. That's why you're incapable of doing anything, because you think you're supposed to be comfortable, and you don't know who to sue or who to blame. I'm lucky. I was born, I was raised to be very uncomfortable at all times and miserable at any moment. I was basically raised to be taken out of bed at any moment, grab something, and walk into the wilderness if I had to. God knows what could happen tomorrow. Doesn't mean I'm tough or anything. And I'm just saying I'm aware that the human condition is one of discomfort. And you say, oh, well, that's such a harsh upbringing that your father gave you, which is why the way you are. Oh, yeah, let me ask you something, Miss Liberal Woman or Liberal Girl who's home for the holidays because you got no job and no boyfriend and you're sitting in your mother's house and you're in your nightgown in the heat. Let me ask you something, what you learned in college this year. How about the tribes in South America where they use hallucinogenics such as ayahuasca, which I've studied in great detail because I'm a world-famous ethnobotanist, and then they take the young men who have to go out and be hunters when they're naked, wearing only a loincloth, in a jungle with no clothing and barefoot, and they sting them with stinging ants that one sting would kill the average person in America. They'd be in an emergency room. They repeatedly sting his whole body, and he doesn't cry out. If he does, he's a weakling. He's a punk. He's a you-know-what. He's not allowed to even whimper. He's got to be stung all over his body. How's that for discomfort? Huh? Don't tell me it's only the white man.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Savage Nation. So I'm going to give you the headlines on michaelsavage.com because it more or less summarizes what I thought are the most important stories. So number one is Murdoch's empire crumbling. Next is top Marxist president wants to tax the taxes. That's your friend Obama. He not only wants to tax you, but he wants to tax your taxation. Tabloid reporters may have tapped phones of 9/11 victims. Horrible story about Murdoch and the redhead over there in England. I don't know what he saw in him, but all right. Obama kills space program, ends America's dominance, kills 10,000 jobs. That's my headline. Savage on Obama and space. You can listen to the sound bites from last Friday. Murdoch newspapers targeted phones of Prince Charles and Gordon Brown. I can't imagine what they wanted to hear Prince Charles talking about. I mean, I have to think about the most boring phone tapping you could do in the world would be that of Prince Charles. Judge tosses out suit over mosque near Ground Zero. In other words, a quizzling judge has said the Ground Zero mosque may go ahead. Well, you don't care about that. Family files suit after six-year-old patted down by TSA. Good. They treated him like a terrorist. What, but they let a Muslim with a robe or a full head covering walk right through? U.S. military's Muslim chaplains vetted by Jew-hating scholar. This is an astonishing story from WorldNet Daily. I got to hand it to WorldNet Daily. I mean, yes, my website runs through their pipeline, but boy, they do the best investigative reporting in the business. Nobody's better than them. In terms of investigative reporting and digging stuff up, there's nobody beating them. Nobody. There's a lot of other. A cartel chief says U.S. government sold them weapons. A mind blower. Could you imagine if Bush was president and they arrested the chief of a Mexican cartel and he said that the U.S. government under George Bush sold them the weapons that they used to kill American citizens and Mexican citizens alike? Tell me what would happen. Tell me what the jerks at the New York Times, L.A. Times, Chicago would be saying. Now we go down to the bottom of the website, Michael Savage, because we're going to get through this fast. Archaeologists excavate biblical giant Goliath's hometown. Not interested. Michelle Obama orders 1,700-calorie meal at Shake Shack. Why not? It's nice to be queen. She can tell you to eat carrots, and she could eat a cheeseburger with fries. Why not? She likes a cheeseburger. Why shouldn't she have what she wants? She could use Air Force Two to go on a junket to Africa. No one says a word. So she could eat as much as she wants and tell you to eat light in the Ein Volk, Ein Reich, Ein. Record temperatures seen as heat wave plagues 15 states. And it's another late July, in other words. And the headache's a little less than it was at the beginning of the hour. But at the end of the hour, the reason I'm still on the air is because I have to practice what I preach. If I were a normal man, A, I would have been dead 30 years ago from what I've been through. That's number one. B, I certainly wouldn't have worked today with what I have going on in the back of my head. It's like when you turn, even you could feel the blood throbbing in the back of your neck. And if I talk too loud, I feel like the pain. I know, I'm not calling anyone. I'll work through it. If it gets worse, what'll happen? I'll work my way through it. It's because I was raised like to be stung by the ants, like the South American hunters. Why do you think I was telling you? Do you understand the point I'm trying to make? The reason the nation is dying is because the people are weaklings, in plain English. The American people are weaklings. Yes, there's been a profusion of phenomenal athletes. And I mean in the average classes of people. I don't just mean professionals. Rock climbers and bicyclers and martial artists. Tremendous profusion. But by and large, we're a nation of weaklings. Raised to be comfortable. And consequently, when you feel a slight quirk or pain, oh, I need a medication. I need to go to Medicare, Medicaid, the doctor. Why isn't the government paying? I want more prescriptions. That's why we're broke. You got to be toughened up. And you don't want to be toughened up. No one does. You want everything for free. And you don't want to hear that you got to be responsible for your own fatness or your own sickness. And you are. And to some extent, of course, there's mysterious elements and accidents. But by and large, you have your health in your own hands. If you are born with reasonably good health, by and large, the health that you are now living with is a result of your lifestyle, in plain English. Plain English. I mean, this is an accepted fact around the world. Since the beginning of time, since Paleolithic times, the mother Paleolith probably said to the child Paleolith, "Don't eat that garbage, it'll make you sick." Or don't hang around with those kids in the other cave. They're going to have you inhale that junk from that tree over there which killed your Uncle Manny. You know what I'm saying? So there's common sense. So when I say to you, I was raised by a father who said to me, you got to go to work when you're young. You got to sell, you know, learn how to sell, learn how to bear boredom. The most important thing, by the way, is learning. You want to hear the toughest thing is bearing boredom in our society. That is probably the toughest job of all. It was the case of the astronaut. He could fly to the moon, came back, right, and had a nervous breakdown when he had to go out with his wife to the supermarket on Saturday. I mean, that can kill anybody, but that's what did him in. He could handle the rigors of being an astronaut, flying to the moon. Came back about 2 months later, he had a breakdown and went into a nut house. Why? Because he couldn't take the normal life. I mean, his big venture was backing the Buick up in a Safeway parking lot without running anyone over. And he had to like make sure he didn't hit the wrong pedal. I could put anyone into a bug house. The point I'm making is you got to make yourself tough, and your kids have to be raised up. It doesn't mean you have to be mean or cruel or vicious to them, but you have to raise them in a tough way. So you say, well, oh, that's old fashioned. That's all gone out with the window. We do it the Spock way, which is positive reinforcement. Oh, Johnny, good job. I go past the Little League field. I get sad for these kids. The kid misses, the bat flies out of his hand, he falls down. Good job, Johnny, at least you didn't break your neck. Good job, they're yelling at a little 2-year-old. They put him in a They got him dressed up like a goon already. The two-year-old goon, they bought him a suit with the hat. And the kid swings and misses and falls down crying. The father says, good job, Johnny. Good job. What good job? The kid swung and missed. What good job? I don't mean you run up and say, idiot, you missed. You don't have to do that. You say, here's how you hit a ball. The way you did it was wrong. There's a right. Oh, you can't say wrong. Because then you're interfering with the liberal education. See, to a liberal, there's no such thing as a wrong in an education other than loving your country. If you believe in borders, language, and culture, you're wrong. But other than that, there's no such thing as wrong. So now I'm going to again bring up the example, South America, the tribes in Brazil, deep in the jungles of Brazil. They inhale, they snort the hallucinogenic ayahuasca, which I believe has a component in it, the last I checked, which was similar to an LSD high. And they get stoned out of their mind with the shaman. I love the shaman. Another guy been getting stoned since he's a kid. Shaman, as far as I'm going to. All right, so the shaman tells him to snort the gun. And then you go into another world and this and that. But when then they teach him to hunt. He's got to go out and hunt, right? He's got to hunt in the jungle. There's no supermarket. So what does he got? He's got a loincloth and a bow and arrow and a spear. The guy's got to go out and provide for himself and his family. He can't call up the Department of Health and Human Services and say, deliver me food or I'll sue you. A, there are no lawyers from NYU in the jungle yet. And B, they know how to hunt and they'll raise from childhood to hunt. All right, so you can't walk out naked in the jungles of South America without expecting to be stung by ants, the fire ants, right? So you have to learn how to put up with being stung without even yelling out. You can't whimper. Why? Because let's say you're hunting a jaguar. And I don't mean in a showroom. Let's say you're hunting a jaguar, or you're hunting a monkey, or you're hunting for whatever you're hunting for. It requires the stealth of an animal. Therefore, no sound. Therefore, the man is trained to take the multiple stings of this fire ant all over his body. And if he whimpers, he's considered a punk, a coward, a loser, a girl, the lowest of the low of the men. He's not considered even a man if he lets out so much as a whimper. Why is that? Because they're mean? No. Because unless the man learns to sustain, to maintain his composure, even under severe pain, he's going to be he's not going to be able to provide for himself and his family. In fact, he'll probably get killed altogether. He'll just be useless to the tribe. So there's a story in that you have to take home to your children and not be so brainwashed into thinking that you're going to hurt their feelings or you're going to ruin them if you say you did it wrong. Stop with this garbage already. You know, I have a little country place somewhere on a hill in Northern California, which I go to from time to time. The house is way up on a hill, and it's up at the treetop level. It's on a very angled hill, so the treetops are below the deck. And they're Monterey pines. And unfortunately, the Monterey pines have been hit with a disease, and they're losing a lot of their foliage. That's a separate story. But I'm watching a battle going on over the last month. There is I'm not a bird expert. I'm not at all into ornithology. I wish I knew more about it. But I believe she is a peregrine falcon. They're not a particularly large bird. She is protecting her nest from black, what we call turkey vultures here, who are trying to steal her eggs. You should see this little mother bird. You should see her flying around from tree to tree. And this is going on now every day for a month. And, you know, you want to reach out and help the bird. You can't. It's Darwinian. It's survival of the fittest. Yesterday I was up there, and you see this poor bird, this beautiful bird. She sits up there, and she looks down, and then they start to circle her, and she comes down and dive bombs them, and then they try to dive bomb her, and she's smaller than them. Now, what is that story all about? What's that story about? It's about nature. Nature is brutal. Nature is just simply brutal. What does that have to do with politics? Exactly the same thing. Russia, China, Iran, they are our adversaries. We are the peregrine falcon. We are the eagle. They are trying to steal our eggs and make certain that we no longer reproduce. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? Do you understand what I am saying to you? It's dog eat dog. And unfortunately, our top dog is working for the other side, either on purpose or because he doesn't know what he's doing. That's one man's opinion. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Clear.
so here's a news story. You ready for this? Scientists find first superbug strain of gonorrhea. Did you hear this one? Welcome back to the Savage Nation. Scientists have found a superbug strain of gonorrhea in Japan that is resistant to all recommended antibiotics and say it could transform a once easily treatable infection into a global public health threat. The new strain of the STD, called HO41, cannot be killed by any currently recommended treatments for gonorrhea, leaving doctors with no other option than to try medicine so far untested against the disease. I'm going to put it up on michaelsavage.com. It's an alarming story because you thought gonorrhea, got the clap, you know. No. It could kill you. That's what's happening. The bugs keep mutating. And it's like the thing I just said to you earlier with the peregrine falcon and the other birds fighting for the eggs. You know what I mean? It's going on all the time under the surface. So the bacteria continuously mutate, and when they're assaulted by antibiotics, they constantly try to find new ways to avoid being killed. And this one apparently has succeeded. Of course, the best answer to avoiding this is to abstain from sex with strange partners. I realize that's considered a crime to say that in America. Today I'm liable to be investigated and banned in Washington, D.C. for having said that. But it reminds me of something I told someone yesterday about my dear old mother. She lived, God bless her. She died about 5-6 years ago. She was 88. She suffered in the end. Sad. No one gets out of this one, boy. And she was 83. She was in very good health, living in Florida in an assisted living facility, complaining as usual, but she enjoyed good health, strong as iron, still breaking my you-know-what. So I had her on the show when she was 83. I don't know if you remember this show. If you do, raise your hand. This is a real loyalty test. And we were talking, you know, and I said, Mom, to what do you ascribe your longevity? Now, she was not an educated woman, so I didn't know if she'd get this, you know, the question. I actually was patronizing her. So she says to me, she was always a step ahead of me. She says to me, in my case, I said, yeah, to what do you ascribe your long age? She says, no sex. Now, I mean, you talk about setting someone up and then coming up with a punchline. If you heard that, that was the line heard around the world. People never forgot that line. It was very funny. What she meant by that was, when my father died, God rest his soul, in 1970, she was a young woman. He died in his early 50s of a second heart attack, worked his heart out, immigrant man, smoked and this and that, worried himself to death, and died. And he left her. Okay, so he left her with a small house and some money, and then not a lot of money. He didn't have a lot of money, but enough. She didn't have to work. But she never dated, never got remarried. She didn't feel the need to run around with another man immediately. You know what I'm saying? It was a different world. She was a very nice woman, a good-looking woman. I'm sure she could have met somebody in her that was age-appropriate and class-associated appropriate. She didn't want it. One husband, that was it. That's it. That's the way they were. Once was enough, if you want to put it in that regard. But that was her answer, no sex. She said to me from the time I was a young child, I don't know, she would say, sex is dirty. Now, of course, you can't say that today, because in an age of sexual liberation with the psychotics running the country and in every avenue of your educational establishment, you have the wackiest people on earth advising children on how to die and get sick as young as possible. You could never say to them sex is dirty because they would be arrested. In other words, anyone who actually said sex is dirty, which it is, would get arrested today. But the woman was right when you think about it. Now, I'm not going anywhere with that. That's the end of that story. I'm just trying to tell you that. Now, if you want to talk about, were you raised in a tough manner? Because, believe me, tough is one thing and hard is another. How were you raised? You have a tough childhood story to tell in the Savage Nation? You know, there's only one way to do a radio show. Today is a Monday, right? Late July, half the people are away. The other half of people are stoned or drunk. They don't know where they are. Obama, or sporting events, baseball, air conditioning. So You have a choice when you go on the radio. You could either go on the radio and do a show as if you had a full audience or try to just, you know, wing it and do nothing. I give my all to every show every day. And today I worked through a headache that another man would have been in an emergency room. Another guy would have gone into the emergency room. Sure, he had a stroke and he was dying. Why? I was stung by ants as a child.
Savage. We'll be right back.
so is, I mean, it's a long rambling story I've been telling you. I've been giving you the news, and I'm saying to you that life is a constant struggle. It's dog eat dog. You don't want to believe it, most of you, because you were raised in the Mickey Mouse world of the United States of America on Dr. Spock and Walter Cronkite. So you think that if it wasn't for the mean white man, everybody would be loving each other and there'd be plenty of money for everybody. But the fact of the matter is, it's a dog-eat-dog world, always has been, always will be, whether it's the peregrine falcon protecting her nest from the other birds of prey, or a microbe fighting with an antibiotic and vice versa, or you in your daily strife trying to make a living. And so you raise a generation of children who are just told from infancy almost that the goal in life is to be uncomfortable without pain. And so the silly children, they use phrases such as, he makes me uncomfortable. Or I was in college today, and I was uncomfortable because the professor made me go home and do a term paper, and I want him fired because he's a racist. He made me uncomfortable for forcing me to perform. And as a result, you have an idiocy that's that reigns through society. And to bring it back home, I'm trying to tell you that the reason the Russians have won the space war is not only because we became weak over time, but because we have someone in the White House who is either playing for the other side or is so enraptured with his own left-wing rhetoric that he actually believed that it was a good time to end our supremacy with regard to space. And he got away with it. Got to hand it to Obama how smart he is. He didn't have a tough life. He had an easy life. So far as I could tell, his grandparents raised him. Everything was done for him. The skids were greased for him from day one. He was given one advantage after another with regard to higher education. And basically the presidency was handed to him by the Republican Party and the establishment, who said it was time for a Democrat because there was 8 years of Republican corruption. You get it? So now let's go to the callers. I asked you if you had had a tough childhood. I'd like to hear, certainly unless you're from South America where you were stung by fire ants, you can't really tell me you had a tough childhood. But let's listen to what people have to say. Beruta in Las Vegas, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes. My trip started back when my mother had to leave Latvia. She lost my dad. She lost a child. And we wound up in a, what they call a displaced persons camp in West Germany right after the war.
Oh, so you were with the DPs. Yes, I certainly am aware of that historically. Okay, so you had nothing. You were in a displaced persons camp. Then what happened?
Well, my mother was a therapist, and she worked, and we raised – actually, I met my dad, and they actually raised pigs, rabbits, and, of course, he was a police chief, so they cleared him out when they camped. My mother was a therapist, so she went to Black Market and actually got extra money. My dad grew tobacco and sold the...
Where did all of this... You mean in the old country when you went back
Germany,
home to...
In Germany.
Oh, in Germany, you had to live in the black market.
In the American zone, there were three zones. The French...
So in other words, in order to survive after the war, Germany had been reduced to rubble because of what they had tried to inflict upon the world. It came back to, you know, they got exactly what they deserved, given that they try to take over the world under the madman. But you're saying as a DP, your folks had to do whatever they had to do to survive, yes?
Everything.
But what about you as a child? What did you have to do?
Well, I remember, my brother remembers more, but I remember we went to school. We had school where I learned to read and write, and of course...
All right, but it wasn't particularly hard for you, was it? I mean, other than a lack of air conditioning?
Well, it was. I mean, you only bathed once a week. A lot of people had problems where they didn't survive because they didn't have food. My mother and dad...
Okay, all right, I hear. So deprivation, there's no question. But you learned to live with the deprivation. So now let's speed the clock up. You're living in Las Vegas. How does it affect your daily life here?
I immigrated. Somebody got it. We came to this country, learned a language. People were good. I went to school.
No. Now, in Las Vegas, now I'm asking you, does your tough childhood help you now?
There's nothing in the world that can throw at me that I could not face.
There you go. So you're not afraid of tomorrow.
My husband. Which
yep. I hear you. Thank you very much. So it made you tougher. That's all. That's what we need to do for the next generation of children if we're to survive as a nation. We got to throw away the playbook on liberal education. It's got to be ripped up and thrown in the garbage. It failed us. you have a generation that not only is not capable of making a living, they won't reproduce. They can't. What more do you need to know about a generation of white kids that they won't reproduce? They're not even having children to sufficient to replace themselves. That means they're committing suicide. That means that they're basically committing suicide. You don't know that, and they don't know it. Nice clothing, Cosmo drinks at night, nice outfit, legs crossed in the cafe. Think that they're sophisticated, acting like Larry David. But the fact of the matter is, fundamentally, they're suicidal in their inability to mate and reproduce. That's the mark of the death of a people. Period. End of story. So I'm saying to you, yes, I'm saying something to you, that if you want this country to survive, you've got to look ahead, and you've got to toughen your children up, and you've got to make them much tougher, and you've got to stop listening to the idiots in the world of therapy and the world of education who tell you, oh, you'll ruin them, you'll hurt their feelings, they won't be able to. Yeah, that's utter nonsense. Don't you remember I had a show about 3 months ago with the Tiger Mom? This is a Chinese-American woman who ridiculed her daughters, told them it wasn't good enough when they got a 98. They had to get 100. Remember the Tiger Mom story? Then it became a big thing a few weeks after that. You heard about it. Well, that's what I'm talking about. Certainly the Chinese don't raise their children like little pumpkins, pink little pumpkins in a crib. That's all. So what else do you want to talk about? 1-800-449-8255. I got news stories that... Unbelievable news. Horrible. Go to my website. You'll see the stories. Larry in Sacramento, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Yes, Michael. I just wanted to tell you, you're the only one. We're about the same age. You're the only one on radio with.
What? You're 39?
You're the only one.
We're the same age. We're both 39, and I'm the only one who does what?
I lie a lot. But anyway, you've got the courage to tell it as it is. Years ago, I was told by an Air Force general that we were going to lose our country. I thought he cracked up. And now that we've elected the kind of people that he and I used to fight in the military, I don't know.
Oh, God, don't say that. I know you're right. Veterans tell me that. I mean, the older veterans say that the very people we were fighting, the communists, are now running the country.
They are. There's no doubt about it, and it was planned.
See, but you need to understand history as we do, and you need to have lived through the Cold War as we have to understand that Obama is clearly a Marxist president. What does he have to do, wear a beret and run around with a red flag? He wouldn't do that. There's no need for him to do that, for me to know it. I mean, just know it by his policies.
Absolutely, Mike. I was told years ago by a member of the Communist Party, all we need is dumb down one generation and we have your country.
There you go. Medical marijuana. Medical marijuana. Thank you, George Soros, for working overtime for the last 12, 15 years to make certain that there's such a thing called medical marijuana when we all know it's a fraud. It's meant to dumb the nation into submission.
And lastly, real quick, I was raised by an old West Pointer. Everything was front and center. Yes, sir. No, sir. And where are we now?
Well, okay. I mean, I'm not going to cry over it because I can't change the course of human events, by the way. All I can do is comment upon it and give some prognostication and make some suggestions. But I'm only one man, as you well know. I've got to get up every day, and I've got to say it like it is. Now, I got to tell you, I got to relate to your point, Larry. It's funny you got on the air. I'll tell you why. I had around 3, 4 in the morning last night, I had a very deep dream that was profoundly in the room, okay? And I don't know who I was speaking with. It was a world figure. And he said to me, you better go quieter on who Obama is. That's all I can warn you. Because he's everything you say he is. And you are in danger. Now, this was a dream, Larry. I agreed, because I know that the communists are running this country, and I know they're running the world. And I know that they put this man in power. One way or the other, I just know it. I don't need anyone to approve. I don't need MSNBC to approve of what I say. Because I'm 10 times smarter than they are, and I know more about history than they do. And I'm playing 5 games of chess while they're playing backgammon. And I am telling you that we may as well have Mao Tse-tung in the White House for what we have right now. Of course he's not going to go to the extreme of what he'd like to do right now. Now he's playing the game, you know, cut this and cut that. But look at what he's done already. Take a look at the devastation this man has wrought upon the landscape. To me, the end of the line was the ending of the moon missions. That, to me, said it all. I said, if he could get away with this, he can get away with anything.
And one last thing, Michael.
Larry, would you believe that in your lifetime you would think that there would be a president who would come along and with the stroke of a pen, without any debate, he would end man's missions, U.S. manned mission to the moon? Do you think there'd be anybody who could do that to NASA and get away with it?
No.
No, impossible. Not at a time when China is spending 40% of its GDP on military. Not at a time when Russia now owns the only way to get into the International Space Station, and that this character has now made our astronauts basically passengers sitting on the back of the bus in Russia. He's put our astronauts at the back of the bus. They have to sit like Rosa Parks on the back of a Russian taxi into the International Space Station. Look at what he's done to this country.
I see it very well, Mike. Keep it up, because you and I are fighters.
Well, I'm not fighting. I'm only one man. I have no power. I'm not bulletproof. I mean, I'm vulnerable, and I fear these people deeply. Let me be very clear about it. Any man who doesn't fear them is a fool. The fact of the matter is, though, we're in very grave danger right now because of the ascendancy of China and Russia and the collapse of our country on so many levels. So the rest of the dream, I want to just finish up. So I said to this, who the figure was who said, be very careful because what you say about Obama is true. Don't be quite so vociferous and open about what you see him doing. And I said to him, I promise you I will no longer say it. I said, I will be much more subtle in my radio shows, and I will tell people to read my books where I could be much more forthright with regard to what I believe is going on. And that was the end of the dream. And here I wake up, and here I am saying the same thing all over again. So I didn't listen to my psyche. I didn't listen to my subconscious. I didn't do my proper dream interpretation. And here I am. What can I do? We all make mistakes. So, news of the world when I return right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Here are some of their top headlines. Look at the propaganda coming out of the Associated Press. Look how they work for the Obama administration. Look at this headline. Shuttle delivers ton of groceries to space station. Instead of the screaming headline being, Marxist president wipes out shuttle, last mission of shuttle, delivers tons of groceries to space station, as though that's what it's all about. Just suddenly now it's like Safeway.com. Debt talks yielded little Obama rules out stopgap. Great, the great leader, Einführer, huh? Debt talks yielded little Obama rules out stopgap. The great Obama rules out stopgap. New allegations besiege Murdoch media empire. They love this because he's the conservative. Admittedly, I mean, a little overreach, but they are salivating all the vermin. The vermin liberal on the left, who've done much worse than him as far as I can tell, they're salivating. Whoa, baby, Texas mom delivers 16-pound newborn. Wow, that's very healthy pregnancy right there. Wonder what she was fressing. Whoa, baby, Texas mom delivers 16-pound newborn. I'm afraid to look at the story. I'll look at it in a minute. I know where it's going. Let me guess. I won't tell you what I'm going to get. I knew it. Giving birth, going biggest newborns they've ever seen. She was waiting with her son, Jamichael Brown, ranked among the biggest births in state history. 16-pounder, whoa. I hope he's healthy. I hope he has a healthy lifestyle. Guinness World Record says the heaviest newborn ever recorded weighed 23 pounds, 12 ounces, born to an Ohio woman in 1879. That's even before the Michelle Obama diet. There was a child born at 23 pounds. That's pretty amazing. Ashworth says Jamichael, whose father is 6'7", was likely to be transferred money from the neonatal in the regular nursing, blah, blah, blah. It's gotten overwhelming, but I've had heard something happening. It's a guy would remember. Okay, so God bless the baby. It'll be on the Oprah Winfrey tomorrow, or I don't know, whatever. It's another one. Like the Octi mom. You knew that was a horrible thing, letting that psycho have babies like that. The doctor should have been arrested. The octuplets. You knew the doctor was an evil. Okay, now the crazy, the woman. She doesn't even want her children anymore because there's no money in it. Speaking of mothers and children, I told you this earlier. maybe 8 years ago, when my mother was still alive, 83, in good health, I called her in Florida, and I asked her, because about, remember how I led into this earlier? I said a superbug has been found, a gonorrhea superbug that no antibiotic can kill. And I told you, I jokingly said in my mother's case, and then she used to tell me when I was young, sex is dirty. It turns out the woman was 100% right. Listen to this, and I'm almost reluctant to play it, because you know it's going to be spooky for me. I don't know if I can make this a show topic, Beowulf. It's kind of fun. I don't want to hear my mother's voice now. I'm not feeling that. Don't play it. No, I can't do it. Not everything's a show topic. We'll do it another day when I'm in a little less vulnerable mood. I'm feeling vulnerable. I'm feeling vulnerable. I don't want to play it. I'm feeling uncomfortable because of the headache. I don't know, whatever. Maybe the moon didn't line up right. Okay, let's take the calls. Nebraska, Evan, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Michael. Just wanted to touch base with you and tell you why I listen to your show. I think that there are a lot of young men out there who are seeking out somebody like you to be a father figure to them because they don't have that father figure in their lives. And you seem to be able to touch base, touch the hearts of many men and give them advice, good advice, and hopefully inspire them to be better.
That's very nice of you. Of course, this only plays outside of New York City, where everyone is so smart, they don't need any advice. People in New York don't need any fatherly figure, any advice. They all know everything about everything. Just ask Larry David and Charlie Sheen. You know what I'm saying? The wise guys don't need anything, just medication and drugs. All they need is medication, psychotherapy around the clock, and drugs. And then just try to ask them something, and I'll give you a wise answer. But the the Bible Belt. I mean, I assume that you have a father, don't you?
I do.
But why? Well, they're not as outspoken as I am. I mean, talk show hosts are pretty outspoken, and if they have something to say, you're going to listen to them. I mean, that's what it comes down to.
Well, come.
And I certainly don't want to supersede the advice of a parent. But the point is, yes, and as a matter of fact, a talk show host, when he touches the heart of the listener, will take on many different roles: a father, a brother, a boyfriend, even a son who you didn't have. Many older people wish that I was there, had been their son. There are many women who wish that their son wasn't their son. They wish that I was their son because I have the common sense that they have, but their son lacks, for example. They don't understand how it happened. That it came from their loins, and the son is an idiot. Has no idea what's going on around them. Can't wait for the old lady to kick the bucket. That kind of thing, whatever. So you take on many different roles. Look at what's going on today in the world. A nightmare from the top to the bottom. From the top to the bottom. The world's in a nightmare. And, of course, the budget is number one. Debt talks yield little. Obama rules out stopgap. Ein Volk, ein Reich, ein Führer. Obama the great man. The man who knows all. The man who was born with perfect knowledge. Somewhere in a world. Perfect knowledge was selected by God and the intergalactic beings and imbued into the head of this young child, the sacred child brought out from the other world to save America and then, of course, save the world from the evil white man, Barack Hussein Obama. Obama rules out stopgap. Oh, he knows so much about economy. Never worked a day in his life. Everything was a government job or a stapler with a community organizational tablet, a pamphlet on a wall. But he knows everything about a budget and about the economy. Everything that was tried and failed in Eastern Europe 50 years ago, he's trying to introduce in America. Everything that they tried in Czechoslovakia and Poland and Latvia after the war and found failed until the wall came down, Obama's now experimenting with because he never actually held a real job. A lemonade stand, he didn't go through that phase. A comic book he never sold. Never worked in Wendy's. No, so far as we know, there were no childhood jobs for Barack Obama. The skids were greased, but now he's in charge of the world's biggest economy, knows exactly what to do. Tax the taxes. In order to save America, we must tax the taxes, and I'll have geniuses like Timothy Geithner working for me who will get up in front of the Senate and say, in order to make sure that no government programs are cut, we must tax the middle class. We must tax every small business to make sure government programs aren't cut. That's Timothy Geithner. Works for Barack Hussein Obama. Two geniuses, two peas in a pod. Unbelievable. As the world turns.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
And now for the news of the savage world, let's go to the website, michaelsavage.com. Top left, news of the world, is Murdoch's empire crumbling? The news of the world phone hacking scandal continues to be an out-of-control brush fire for Rupert Murdoch's media empire, says the LA Times. His competitors in London are not so nice. They say tabloid reporters may have tapped phones of 9/11 victims. Above it all, though, on Michael Savage, hey, have you seen the new website? The design is the best in the business. Obama wants to tax the taxes. Top Marxist prez wants to tax the taxes. Well, that's laughable. What's not laughable is identity theft. Someone stealing your credit cards and trying to destroy your life? Don't be a victim. Call my advertiser, LifeLock, today. Call LifeLock at 1-800-642-2289. And you get 60 risk-free days just for Savage listeners. 1-800-642-2289. Call them now. Marxist Prez wants to tax the taxes, from the Wall Street Journal. He wants $1 trillion in taxes on top of what he's already taxed. There it is, tax and spend communism. In case you missed it, listen to the audio, Savage on Obama and Space. Let's go to the bottom of the website. Very sad story. I don't know if you want to look at it. A beautiful Christian family of seven were killed. Well, they all died together in an Alabama plane crash. Dad was flying this twin-engine plane. They're flying back Saturday from vacation so they can make it to church. Okay, go explain that one. And his father had said to him, why don't you get a newer plane? You got your whole family. And he said, Dad, it has new engines. So much for new engines. One engine quit. Whew. Federal government says marijuana has no accepted medical use. Well, that's interesting. Hotel maid made it up. Well, that's an old story. We know that. What else is on the website? Cartel chief says U.S. government sold them weapons. Oh, you don't know about the Obama gun running? Huh? Did you know that the Australians are going to make a new law making the Muslims lift their veils? Ha. Oh, can't do that. Let's see what else is on michaelsavage.com. I haven't really looked at the website today. I've been busy eating Indian food for lunch and went to a buffet over 8. I always say to myself, don't go to the buffets. You know what's going to happen. You're going to eat that second, third plate. I ate the fourth plate. You know what's going to happen. You're making believe you're going there for the rice and the vegetarian, then you're going to eat the lamb, and I did 3 times. Because you say to yourself, well, the lamb is dead anyway. It doesn't matter. The poor thing's dead. And you do a Hail Mary over the lamb 3 or 4 times. It's unbelievable. This is how you cheat on your diet, is you go to buffets and you go back 3 or 4 times. That's what matters to me at this phase of my life. Is my mother used to say it was Italian or Chinese at the end of her years. Now, I'm not anywhere near the end of my years. It is true. I'm putting together the Savage Library. I have someone archiving every radio tape I've ever saved going back to 1994. What a job. You'd think I was crazy. I have radio tapes going back to when I was a local host because I knew that there was gold in them Nor Hills, in them Knob tapes. And manuscripts, after all, I've only written 25 books, most of them in longhand, and the manuscripts must be worth something. I realize that I'm not as famous as a man who drowned a girl in a car, but there might be a buyer out there for such an estate. You never know. Might be worth a few pennies now and again. All of the handwritten manuscripts, the notes, the letters, the audio tapes going back to 1994. Things of that nature. So my own non-Ubermensch way, I'm trying to put these things together. And I mean, that's what I've been doing sort of on the side here. Incidentally, you can see what I've written in part by going to michaelsavage.com. I'm about to, I was going through my archives today because the archivist needs all the tapes. And I uncovered mountains of tapes in 1994, 95, 96 when I was a local host. But leave it there on tape. These are on actual audio tapes. I used to drive them crazy at the station and make the poor engineers record these shows. And I would put little wrappers around them with handwritten notes. Like today I talked about Ted Kennedy and Chappaquiddick. That was in 94. I was still to things of that nature. Immigration out of control, 94, 95. All these notes are on. And I discovered old coins. Would you believe it? I found boxes and boxes of Morgan silver dollars, Indian head cents. Then I stumbled upon some things owned by my children in storage. God, like junior high school report cards and journals that I had them keep when we take them on ocean trips when they were in school. I remember we used to take them on trips and take them out of school because there was a credo that your child will learn more on a cruise on an ocean liner in traveling and experiences than he will in the sixth or seventh or eighth grade. Well, that was a liberal credo. They wouldn't say that anymore because liberals don't travel with their children. They're too busy traveling with themselves so they can switch hit with each other while they're on the road, and the children are left at home with a house sitter with Ritalin. But we actually traveled with our children on ocean liners, and I found the journals, they're very touching. Usually the child, it's very much out of Mark Twain. It's very cute. The journals, I say, okay, look, son, here's what we're going to do. We're going on a trip for 4 weeks in December. You're going to be out of school. I'm going to miss 2 weeks, 3 weeks of school. But I'll tell you what, you're going to keep a journal of every port we go to. That's when I was collecting plants in the South Pacific, Fiji, Tonga, Samoa, the Palmyras. I mean, amazing places. And I said, and if you meet interesting people on the ship, you're going to make notes of it. And birds, you're going to make notes of birds that you see and things that, sure, Dad, great, love it. And the first day, they sit at the table, you know, the card table, while the people are somewhere else up in the dining room, and they write. You look at the journal 20 years later, it's only two pages are dutifully entered, and then the rest are blank because kids are kids. They were busy living and enjoying themselves instead of writing down a stupid journal that nobody would ever read. They actually were looking at the birds. They actually were running on the decks of the ship. God bless them. I'm glad they didn't keep a journal. But those first two pages were really well. Good penmanship was great. No, those are the days. You know that my bar bills, I still have some of the bar bills from those ships. My bar bills for wine and drinks were higher than my rent was. They used to charge you. There's nothing else to do on a ship other than drink. That's the big secret of why people go on. Well, you see, in those days, ships were a little different than they are today. Today, they're floating Las Vegas hotels. What they are is like a Motel 6 with propellers today. You can't even walk on a ship and enjoy the air without some kind of Muzak driving you indoors so that you gamble or buy some garbage that you could buy in Target for less money, for example. But in the days that I began traveling on ships, I traveled on some of the last great ships, the Oriana. In fact, I just found some artifacts from the Canberra, the Oriana. These were amazing ocean liners that were used for actual transport as opposed to being simply a floating brothel. Pardon me for leaving the news for a moment. But this is a talk show, and since it's a talk show, we talk about things other than the news, even though the news is very important, and things of that nature. But we talk about other things, particularly if you're a great conversationalist as I am, and being a Renaissance man as I am, I can talk about most everything with some degree of knowledge. Is there anyone listening to this show who is not an executor, but an appraiser of literary estates? Let me put it to you that way. I've written 25 books, right? So I have manuscripts, cartons, mementos. Then I have 15 years of tapes, radio tapes. They have to be worth a fortune because once I get this all put together and insured, I'm probably going to either sell it off or build a library and then donate all the money to charity. I have some idea of what this is worth, and I'm not going to throw the number out, but I want a genuine appraiser to call the show. I don't know how they do these things. I mean, they say that, let's say, Jack Kerouac's estate is worth $20 to $25 million. Now, he was a really great writer, and it contained his first manuscript for On the Road with a teletype roll and all of that, and then the family's fighting over the estate and blah blah blah. How do you determine what something is worth? I have millions of listeners, and I have several million readers of my books, so therefore there's a value. It's a matter of what the value is. And I don't know how you come to these terms. Or I'll just build a library. I have an idea for that. And the centerpiece will be the 1965 Cadillac, which right now has its fuel tank removed because apparently something broke in it. And the center thing will be the 65 caddy with American flags on it, when the chrome was thick and the women were straight. I, Michael Savage, will be right back.
Savage.
I'm going to make a commitment today on the Savage Nation to avoid anything that is within the alimentary canal from the front to the end. We will nothing to do with anything to do with the alimentary canal for the moment. I'm going to talk about cars, classic cars. I went to a classic car show. I'm more or less a recluse, as you well know. I pride myself on reclusiveness. Now, there are younger guys who are hungry, and they need to make a buck, and they're everywhere. They're the Zelligs of the media. Wherever you turn, there they are. This Tea Party, that Tea Party. It's important stuff. Everywhere you turn, Fox News, CNN, Bill Markowitz's show, everywhere you turn, there are Zelligs in the media appearing every day in every way. Now, that's fine. I don't do it. I never like to do it, and I don't want to do it. So I basically stay in my house in pajamas, except for the occasional bicycle ride or the occasional car show or the miserable trip to a restaurant, which I always regret. Now, there's a secondary note to all of this talking here on the Savage Nation. I stayed in bed most of the weekend, and I feel great. My mind feels better. I feel calmer. I can think. So I went to a car show, the Marin Sonoma Classic Car Show out in the Marin, where was it? An outdoor thing. And I was astounded at the love for vehicles that I saw there, including my own. I mean, I can remember the cars that were there. Some of them, the Duesenbergs, the 59 Vet, the Mercedes-Benz 300 SLs, the Bentley Continental from 1961, the Pierce Arrows, the 56 Continental, the 56 T-Bird. I mean, see, if I just mention the names of these cars to most of you, they actually symbolize to you various images come to your mind. And if I say to you I saw the most amazingly beautiful 1957 Chrysler 300D, and I couldn't take my eyes off it, you'll understand what I'm saying. But, you know, it's funny. Of all the cars I saw there, I had a friend I ran into, an old mechanic friend of mine. He used to fix my old Jaguars, which always broke down. He took a picture of me in front of one car. I only asked him to take a picture of me and Teddy in front of one car. It was a Model T Ford Roadster. It was so beautiful. And I wanted to picture myself in front of the Model T only because I used to build them out of plastic when I was a kid. And it just reminded me. I remember the hard rubber wheels. It all came back to me. But what I'm getting at was the crowd at the auto show. And I was thinking about a few things as I walked around looking at these stunningly gorgeous cars. I could not get out of my head, what would the Obamaites be thinking? That's all I was thinking. What would these hardcore leftist freaks in the White House think of a classic car show such as the one I went to over the weekend? And all I could think about was these mean monsters from Harvard, these undereducated pinheads, would sort of not only look down upon classic car shows such as this, but that in the future they might ban this sort of show because the cars were not green enough, or that only people with money could afford cars like this. And I started thinking as I walked around looking at these incredible classic cars, what do you think it is about car shows that angers progressives? And then I was going to ask you, do you still have a love affair with cars, or are they just box transportation to you? And then I was going to say, what does the way a person takes care of their car say about their politics? And do liberals drive differently than conservatives? I can say for sure. Genuinely, when I'm cut off, it's a lame brain with an Obama bumper sticker from the right lane. One after the other, and it's usually older women who have been disappointed in life. Either their husbands left them or they were never married, whatever it is. They generally still drive around with the Obama, you know, for president bumper sticker in some kind of econo box, and they usually try to cut you off from the right lane. And when you don't let them in, they get furious. Like, we have merging lanes in certain parts of the area where I live. Inevitably, they know the right lane merges into the left. They know it's coming to a dead end. And it's always the, quote, nice liberals who try to speed up in the right lane. And I don't know. I won't let him in. I won't let him in. I'm a very competitive person. I don't like being cut off. So I give Wilhelm the gas, and Wilhelm gives them the fume. and they get cut off to the, you know, like, screw you. I mean, what do you mean? You're going to cut me off because you're a nice person? Because you have an Obama bumper sticker? So I, anyway, so the cars. You know, you want to talk about cars. I don't know if you want to talk about it. You want me to get into the whole politics today? Obama signs a Freedom of Press Act and takes no questions from the press. Hello? That is why I'd rather talk about Janis Joplin's psychedelic-themed 1965 Porsche 356 Cabriolet. I have never been a Porsche fan. I never owned one. I never wanted to own one. I was never, I don't know what it is, maybe the Nazi thing. I don't really know. It can't be the Nazi thing because I own a Mercedes, and that was so long ago, who cares anyway? I mean, I love Mercedes-Benz. It's the best car I ever owned in my life. It's all I drive. I told you I have fancy cars, and I have unfancy cars. My daily driver is a 600S, an S600 Mercedes. I gave it a name, Wilhelm. I don't drive around saying Wilhelm. I don't talk to it. I'm generally either driving or talking to my dog, Teddy. But the fact of the matter is, after I got this car, I never, ever needed a sports-type car. And I do own a Ferrari, a 430. I rarely, if ever, drive it. But the funny thing is that after I saw the Testarossa and the other Ferraris at the fairgrounds yesterday, actually, even though it was cloudy and horrible and miserable weather, I went all the way to a garage where I keep it, took the cover off it, and took the Ferrari for a drive because the color itself, the Ferrari red in the gray, was astoundingly beautiful. But I'm not one of these guys with the top down making believe I'm enjoying the sun. I don't know. I still don't understand that part of it. Do you? I can't understand it. Whenever there's a hot, sunny day, you see people with the top down. They're enjoying the sun. And I ask myself, did they go to the fifth grade? Did they don't understand the relationship between the sun and skin cancer, especially amongst white men over the age of 13? I mean, what are they thinking? A convertible's nice for a night, a warm, balmy night in Miami, but not for the day. What do you need sun on your face for? It's to show off. That's all it is. Now, who in this day and age thinks anyone who drives around in a convertible is rich or a celebrity? Does anyone, can you answer that question? Most of the so-called loser celebrities in Hollywood drive Priuses anyway. I know that for a fact because I go to L.A. an awful lot. They wouldn't be seen dead in a new car other than some kind of hybrid.
Savage.
Afghanistan, Afghanistan, Afghanistan. Obama's plans for Afghanistan have many people in Washington, D.C. and the rest of America just scratching their heads. Congressman Duncan Hunter, for example, who just came back from visiting Afghanistan to take a look at what's really going on, cannot believe what Obama's about to do. Congressman Hunter, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Mike, it's great to be on your show. Thanks for having me on again.
Congressman, after 9/11, you quit your job and joined the Marine Corps. In 2007, you served in Afghanistan before running for Congress. How have things changed since you were there as a Marine?
Well, the biggest change in Afghanistan in 2007, there were about 25 Marines on the ground in Afghanistan. Now there's over 10,000. Obviously, the big surge has taken place. Everybody has decided that Iraq was the bad war, which we've won, by the way. Afghanistan was the good war. The surge has taken place, and we've tried to turn Afghanistan into a Jeffersonian democracy. To be fair to our military, they're doing a superb job. I mean, they're doing everything we've asked of them and more. But the problem is not with our military. I would say it lies more with the American State Department and the goals and the bars that they've set for what success means in Afghanistan. And I think as we move forward over the next couple of years, we're going to see those bars being lowered and lowered and lowered and lowered until realism hits the State Department. And I think right now, particularly right now, after hearing that President Obama is going to be denying aid to Pakistan, that the Department of Defense is starting to win this argument, saying, hey, we can't win Afghanistan by fixing their bank, making their government officials less corrupt, trying to give them an infrastructure so that their roadways look like San Diego. What we need to do here is get the bad guys out of the way, and take care of Pakistan. That's where everybody knows the problems are coming from. They're coming from Pakistan, but it takes a leader as president to stand up and say, hey, Pakistan, we're not going to take it anymore. We're going to strike the bad guys even when they cross the line from Afghanistan to Pakistan. We're not going to stop at the border. We're going to pursue them, and we're going to take them out. that's the only way, truly, that we can leave Afghanistan as a peaceful third-world nation instead of a war-torn third-world nation.
What do you personally think about Obama's drawdown strategy?
You know, to be honest, and this is going to sound strange because the Republicans are bashing it and the Democrats are saying it's beautiful, the reality is it's in the middle. I think it's a good position. We had a temporary surge. We're going to be drawing down now. If you talk to the military folks, they always see success, and that's good. That's what they're paid to do, but they're also inside the box. I think that we need to draw down out of Afghanistan, but we need to do it while winning. And that means that we need to lower the bar so we can win militarily. We can chase the insurgents, these transnational terrorists across the border into Pakistan, take out their safe havens. And then we're going to be dealing with a third world nation like any other, as opposed to one where you have terrorists coming across the border at their will and leisure. But my point is, you have to separate Obama's political timing, which I think the drawdown is. I think his timing's political. If you separate his bad motives from the objective and the end state, which is to have fewer troops in Afghanistan but be successful and make sure we don't get attacked from there again, then it's good. But it is hard to separate those two, and it's hard to take a nuanced position in the middle, but that's the reality. We do need to draw down in Afghanistan. We don't want to be there forever, and we especially don't want to be there forever with goals that are impossible to put down and set in stone, which we have not set those goals yet. Well, we can say, hey, we've achieved this, this, and this. We can leave now. Those goals still have not been stated, clearly, I don't think, by the administration, nor by our military leaders, really. The main goal should be this: no more terrorism that where they're able to attack us here in America. As long as they stay focused on each other, which I think that they've done for thousands of years and will do for thousands of years, that's okay with me. As long as the American homeland doesn't get attacked, that should be our objective.
Well, given the lack of goals for victory in Afghanistan, what can we actually hope to happen there?
Well, I think we can win if our definition of victory is, hey, we're not going to be attacked again from that area. We're not going to have transnational terrorists plotting to attack Western civilization, basically. And we can achieve that easily. I mean, that's an easy success that our men and women in the military can do, that our men and women in the State Department can do, and our other more covert agencies. We can do that, and we've been doing that. It's when you set the bar higher and say, we want to turn Afghanistan into San Diego, that's where everything gets cloudy, and that's kind of where we are right now. We need to bring that bar back down and say, hey, as long as these bad guys are focused on each other and focused internally on Pakistan itself, on Afghanistan itself, in Iran, in India, and they're dealing with each other the way that countries always have. They're always spying on each other. They're always fighting. They're always trying to make peace and make deals. As long as they're doing that and they're not focused externally on us, frankly, I don't care. My job here in Congress and the president's job should be to make sure that America remains safe. Now, that means staying in the fight, and we can stay in the fight, and we can kill the bad guys, and we can spy on the bad guys with a much smaller number, of course, in Afghanistan than we have now. Do we need to work with Pakistan? Yes, but we need to work with them so that we can kill the bad guys. Do we need to work with Afghanistan because of Iran to its west and Pakistan to its east? You're darn right we do. That's an important place to be probably for the next 50 years, just to make sure that another 9/11 doesn't happen. We don't need 100,000 troops to do that, though. I'm not the tactician. I don't know how many troops it's going to take, but it's going to take a hell of a lot less than we have there right now, with much more specific guidelines, rules of engagements, and objectives than we right now have for our military.
Well, that's just an incredible lack of leadership. What are the ordinary troops on the ground telling you about what's the situation there?
The ordinary troops on the ground are saying this, basically. This is winnable if the objective is to make sure that America does not get attacked again and that we keep our eyes on the crazy radical fundamentalists in that area, then we're winning, and we are winning handily. Where they see the downside is they're in Afghanistan. They're in a place a long way from home where it's extremely hard to see the implications that a more secure Afghanistan has for America. 9/11 was almost 10 years ago. It's going to be 10 years at the end of this year in September. And we as Americans need to look back and say, hey, the reason we let this happen is because we took our eye off the ball. they realize we got to keep our eye on the ball, but they also don't want to be grasping it at bars that are set so high that they know that it's impossible to grasp them. And I think that's what they're feeling right now. I mean, trying to train the Afghan military where they have an average 7% literacy rate. I mean, our goal in Afghanistan right now with the Afghan police and the Afghan military is to get 14% of their members to a third-grade reading level. I mean, imagine that. Those are the police and the military folks that the rest of the population is supposed to look up to and trust. We're trying to get 14% of them to a third-grade reading level. If you look at our American military, and they look at you like, hey, this is a joke. You got to be kidding me. There's no way these guys are going to stand on their own 2 feet after we leave. The reality is we're going to need to keep people there forever to, I guess, fortify their spines, make them stand up to the bad guys. But I don't think we need grandiose and lofty impossible goals to do that, and we don't need 100,000 troops over there to do it either.
Well, okay, so how much longer do you think we need to be in Afghanistan?
It all depends on the ground scenario. I mean, you've heard that said a thousand times, but that's the truth. The faster, just like Iraq, what Iraq taught us is this. The faster you can train the host country's military to take our place, the quicker we can leave. And that is reality. That's why Iraq right now is holding. It's not the greatest place in the world to be, but Michael, I will tell you, in you know, 10 or 15 years, you and I will be able to go tour Babylon. I mean, that's what I truly believe. So looking at Afghanistan, we got a much harder job training their military because of their literacy rate, just the way that they live, their lack of infrastructure. But once we train their military up, that's how we leave. And Petraeus told me that. That's exactly what he said. He said, if we pull down 30,000 troops, we will have had 70,000 more Afghan troops trained to take our place. Are they going to be up to snuff when it comes to American standards? No. But they're going to be there, and hopefully they're going to hold, and we're going to have guys on the ground still during that time making sure that they hold.
Congressman Duncan Hunter, thanks for being on the Savage Nation and giving us the perspective of a Marine and not a Mandarin.
Hey, Mike, thanks a lot for everything. Keep up the great work.
I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
You know what? I'm going to open it up to anything. Give me some rock and roll. Let's do. Do you have The Great Pretender by The Platters? I heard it the other night. I really loved it. I was in a very sad, depressed mood. I was alone. I go into these moods in and out. I admit it. I'm not ashamed of it. You know, it gets back to something. You got it. Look at that. Follow the bouncing Prozac pill. Follow it along the bottom of the radio speaker, the bouncing Prozac pill.
I pretend too much. I'm lonely, but no one can tell. Oh, yes, I'm the great pretender.
Ooh.
Adrift in a world of my own. I play the game, but to my real shame, you've left me to dream all alone.
Great song, actually, to be honest with you. Anyway, turn it on. It's my own thing. But so I'm getting into one of those moods, and I decide to have a couple of drinks by myself, which I did. And I had a couple of drinks, and the mood went away. But the thing I'm telling you is that life sucks. And once you accept that life sucks, it becomes easier to deal with. And that's why there's so much weakness in America, is because we're deluded into thinking that we're supposed to be happy, and everyone else is happy, and you're the only one who's feeling lonely, or you're feeling life's burdens and no one else, and you look at the ads every minute, there's a ha-ha and a ho-ho and a hee and it, and the media continuously drives this concept that everyone else is having a great time except you. You're the only one having a miserable time. But in fact, this is what life is. And a lot of it is the fact that you were raised, if you're a person under 45, you were probably raised in a Spockian, nightmare where you were told that life is pleasant, life is easy, life is good. And maybe it is for you. Maybe you're a lucky person. You'd be the exception. You're not the norm. For most people, life is a grind. Life is a bore, and life is difficult, and life sucks. And there is no happiness. Happiness is fleeting. Happiness is transient. Happiness exists here and there. You have moments of happiness, whatever they may be for you. I don't know what they are. The birth of a child, the wedding of your daughter. I don't know what the hell. Walking your child, seeing the kid in the graduation hat. Whatever it is, I don't know, getting a promotion, seeing a book published. There are small moments, but basically it's a flat line of difficulty for the average person. Then you get sick and you suffer, and then you die a horrible death, usually alone in a home or in a hospital. And once you accept that that's the terms, that's the deal, that's it. It isn't that bad when you realize what people have suffered through the ages. So what you have to do is toughen yourself up, and you have to learn that life is not the delusion that if only there was another elected official out there who gave you free medical care, we gave you prescription drugs, you'd be happy if you had prescription drugs. If only you had more prescription drugs, more crutches from the government, then you'd be happy. Then you got to pray a lot. I mean, you got to go back to the holy books that your fathers or grandfathers, you're only probably, no matter who you are, let's say your hair is green and you got 18 nose rings and nipple rings and this ring and that ring, and you're running around in L.A. twinkling around thinking you're free, you're free, you're free. I don't hear freedom. I hear slavery. The more I hear those rings rattle, the more I know you're a slave. You're probably only two generations at most away from a very religious person in your family. Max, two generations. The most. Someone who actually believed in the Word of God and went to church or synagogue. And you may find that, you know, is the way to go. You know, there are. What I found is that there's no single way to go in my own case. It doesn't work for you. It works for me. You got to do an awful lot of different things. Exercise, vitamins, eat right, know how to control yourself, know where to get your pleasure, know where not to get your pleasure. You got to pray. You got to believe in God. You know, everything is part of the whole. There's no single path for the modern man. There's no simple solution for it all. In other words, you just got to deal with life's burdens. Or else, what are you going to do? What, are you going to kill yourself? Well, okay. So it is related to politics, what I'm saying to you. We're living in a delusional nation. Everything is fantasy. We all watch too much TV, too many movies. I myself do. I admit it. I don't know how much of what how many movies I've watched. If I could redo one thing in my life, I would never have watched movies or television in my life. I can't imagine life without it. I've been brainwashed since I'm a child. Remember, I'm born in the television age. Would you believe I go back to a time before there was television? Can you believe that? That's amazing. But I remember living in a time when there was no television in a house. There was only a radio. We would sit around and listen to the radio. I'd lie on my father's lap. He'd smoke Philip Morris, God rest his soul. And we'd listen to shows like The Green Hornet and whatever. And you had to use your imagination. When you listen to radio as a child, this is why I'm so talented in radio. Because I grew up on radio. Don't you understand there's a difference? It's not that there are people younger than me who can't do radio, but my father used to explain to me that radio was actually a better medium. He used to say to me, I like radio better. I said, why, Dad? Because you have to. He used to say to me, because you have to use your imagination. I said, oh, okay. So he taught me how to use my imagination. Not that it was too hard for me to do so. There was so much tragedy in my youth that I learned to live in a fantasy world. I created my own fantasy world in order to overcome the tragedy of my childhood. But that's good. That is good. That's what creative people do. They create with their sadness. They create with their misery. They don't succumb to a drug. Don't you understand that? That when you suppress sadness, when you suppress loneliness, when you keep suppressing these things with drugs, you're killing yourself. It's a small death. It's a petite mort. You know what I'm saying? Le petite mort. But it's not even the pleasure of the petite mort. Play the Green Hornet for the audience. They don't know what I'm talking about.
He hunts the biggest of all games. Public enemies who try to destroy our America.
I turn it off. This is horrible. Bad radio. What is this now? Many of you don't know how to raise children. You need me to tell you. You do. Many of you don't have a parent. You don't have a father. You don't have an uncle. You have no one to rely upon. And you don't know what to do. You don't know how to turn. And I'm telling you that this coddling stuff, I'm not saying hit your kid. Don't get me wrong. I'm not giving you that advice. But you got to teach your child reality. And you got to teach your child that life is not a bowl of cherries. You got to teach them that life is hard. Life is going to leave you alone a lot. You got to teach your child to be alone a lot. Did you know that? You know you got to teach your child how to be alone a lot in order to be alone a lot, because he's going to be alone a lot when he grows up. Did you hear what I just said? We don't live in a commune. He's not going to live in Ding Dong School the rest of his life. Teach your child how to be alone. I remember when my first child was a baby, I didn't know how to raise an infant, so I turned to various cultures for advice. I mean, I was an anthropologist at the time, and I was immersing myself in Native American, everything I could read on the on tribal lore. I read South Pacific, this and that. But one of the things I read was how the Native Americans, some of the tribes, raised their young sons to be tough, basically. And when the young baby, if it was a boy baby, started to cry, they'd wrap the baby in a papoose and then put the papoose out on a tree outside the teepee until the baby screamed and cried till he didn't scream anymore. I read that. Now, of course, today the Child Protective Service is the ones that will not go to the home of a talk show host who imagined doing his own daughter and son and the son's friends, allegedly. The same CPS run by the hippopotamuses in Child Protective Services, the mean-faced, clipped-haired hippos who run these agencies, would, of course, arrest a Native American who did that today. But it was a pretty good idea. In other words, a child will cry and cry and cry till there's no crying left. And guess what? Then the child becomes hardened. He's harder as a result. Oh, he doesn't feel as much as you want him to feel? Oh, he doesn't know, he doesn't feel like you want him to feel? You want him to be a feeling man? You want him to be a metrosexual son? Maybe you don't want him to be a metrosexual son. Maybe if you raised your son a little bit more like that, and then you watched a few shows on the Spetsnaz training for the Russian Special Forces and see how tough these guys are compared to even our toughest of tough. This is the Savage Nation.